Hey, real quick, what do you think the odds are that Donovan Mitchell gets traded before the season?
Oh, like at this point, 80%?
What are the odds it's before tomorrow morning, before Friday morning, if I wait to post this?
Under 10%?
Okay, I like those odds. Welcome to the Pro Basketball Talk podcast. I'm Dan Feldman here with Andy Larson of the Salt Lake Tribune. Andy, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you sound very confident that Donovan Mitchell will get traded before the season. What gives you that level of confidence?
Look, I mean, you just don't have this level of conversations about stars or really about many players without then going on to move them on. And then, frankly, you get into kind of the incentives here, right, for the Jazz, which is why are they trading Donovan Mitchell in the first place? And, you know, some of it is that it has been problematic, and some of it is that, you know, Donovan probably does want to leave the Jazz after this contract is up, but it's in three seasons, right? I mean, this is really a move mostly about not wanting to be stuck in the middle, and I think that's what probably Donovan Mitchell, a team built around Donovan Mitchell, a team currently that doesn't have very many small forwards and probably no starting centers, is going to be a 35-45 win team in the West. And that's probably the worst place you can be. And so when you have a team that's as interested as the Knicks are, that is, you know, apparently willing to give up as much as they've talked about in trade negotiations so far, it feels like the time is right. And it feels like, you know, as far as the Jazz maximizing their pick this year and then maximizing their return, this is probably the time.
So the Knicks obviously seem very, very interested in Donovan Mitchell. What do you think the offer ends up looking like in the end? I think we've seen this enough where the expectation has just kind of got to be, oh, we'll just wait till James Dolan gets involved and goes over the top, and it probably would be good otherwise, but I got to imagine for the Jazz to do this, it's going to be pretty lucrative in the end.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Jazz have, and I reported this earlier Thursday, the Jazz have asked for the Knicks have 8 tradable first round picks.
Plus 4 swaps.
What's that?
Plus 4 swaps.
Plus 4 swaps. The Jazz have asked for a majority of the 8 picks, plus additional swaps, plus a number of young players not named RJ Barrett. So Emmanuel Quickley, Quentin Grimes, Miles McBride, Obi Toppin, and Cam Reddish are kind of the 5 logical candidates there. And I think, you know, the one that I've heard they're most interested in is Quentin Grimes, who has had a very good summer league. They're looking, you know, their initial ask is, frankly, an unprecedented trade haul in NBA history. You know, we haven't seen 6-7 draft picks traded before plus pick swaps, right? Like, so that would be something new and unusual in NBA history. But that's what the asking price that the Jazz are asking for a, you know, 26-year-old guy who's under contract for 3 years that wants to be in New York moving forward and is one of the league's most efficient offensive players.
The Jazz have to get more than they got for Rudy Gobert, right? We keep hearing about this trade of, oh, the Nets can't trade Kevin Durant for less than the Jazz got for Rudy Gobert. And I get that. But the Jazz especially can't trade Donovan Mitchell for less than they got Rudy Gobert, right? I mean, Donovan Mitchell, younger, plays the premium position, has his specialty in scoring creation, which is more valuable overall than I'm a big Rudy Gobert fan of everything he does. But Donovan Mitchell is the more valuable player. So it's got to be even more than that haul that knocked everybody off their socks, right?
Yeah, you would think. I mean, look, I think the analytics might point in the direction of Rudy Gobert, but kind of every other factor you just mentioned, age, contract status, contractual size and length, you know, a preference on where he wants to play, like you say, positional scarcity, all of those things all favor Donovan, right? And so, yeah, you know, I think that's why you're seeing the Jazz asking for, you know, in the Gobert deal, they got 4 first-round picks plus a pick swap plus, you know, a first-year pick in the 2022 draft, Walker Kessler. I think the Jazz are asking for more. You know, I think will and you know expect to get, and I think they will probably get either, you know, 5 first round picks or more back, or, you know, including pick swaps if you want to kind of put those in the calculus, or, you know, kind of more compelling younger pieces, whether that's RJ Barrett, you know, we've mentioned Tyler Hero and as a possibility from Miami, or, you know, just sheer numbers of young players. Like, you know, I think it's fair to say that Quentin Grimes has shown more than Leandro Bolmaro. You know, Emmanuel Quickley's done some good things in the NBA. Obviously, Obi Toppin has as well. You know, I think there are kind of some really good young contributors on this Knicks roster that are in their still in their rookie deals, and in the case of Quentin Grimes, have 3 years left on their deal, right? So, I think there's value to be had from the Knicks that would exceed that Gobert offer.
You mentioned that the Jazz, I don't know if I agree with this, but that the Jazz are in the worst possible place where, you know, you have Donovan Mitchell and you're going to win somewhere around 40 games, give or take a handful of games, and you're just kind of stuck there. But I'm with you that there's so much momentum toward a trade is probably going to happen. But just in terms of Utah's internal leverage, I see a team that, yeah, is taking a step back without Gobert. Gobert is one of the more underrated players in the league. You can't just lose him for a pick-centric package and be as good. However, you have all these picks. There is an opportunity, if the Jazz had wanted to build up around Donovan Mitchell, right? There's the surplus of picks, and those are going to be useful. Whether you're picking the player or using them in trades to add somebody, there are tons of possibilities. And I look at the Knicks, and if they give up all the picks to get Donovan Mitchell, okay, I guess Jalen Brunson is there. Julius Randle will still be there. It sounds like RJ Barrett will probably still be there. I'm not saying the cupboard is empty, but what do you see as the outlook for that team all of a sudden short on all the picks, right? You know, you get Donovan Mitchell, that's great, but you're out these picks. I don't know if his supporting cast looks great to me. What do you think about a Donovan Mitchell-led Knicks team?
Yeah, it's really offensive heavy, right? Like, you're talking Jalen Brunson and Donovan Mitchell in your backcourt. A small defensive backcourt, and I think Brunson's a better defender than Mike Conley, but still you have a lack of size there. You know, I think a motivated Donovan Mitchell can defend better, but he hasn't in his NBA career to this point. And then obviously you've got Julius Randle, who is not a defensive player, and you've got RJ Barrett, who has played good defense, but, you know, wants his role in the offense too, and has taken some bad shots, frankly. So you're asking a lot of, like, Mitchell Robinson in order to clean all that up, and frankly, Mitchell Robinson is not Rudy Gobert, you know, like, that's just, it's going to be a big difference for them. So I agree, like, I think as is, they are probably a flawed cast of characters that, you know, probably is not at least in my view, a top four team in the East. That being said, I do think that there's kind of room, there is upside there, you know, if RJ Barrett does take another leap. If Donovan Mitchell does start to defend, or frankly, you know, play better or harder than he did in the last year in Salt Lake, if Jalen Brunson continues to improve, if, you know, I think there's kind of upside growth potential there. And so I do understand why the Knicks would do it. And, you know, maybe you can package, if you don't think that the Mitchell Brunson fit can work long term, maybe you can package Brunson along with something and get, you know, a better backcourt mate or a better wing player or a better, you know, whatever that might be. You know, I think you do have still some assets left, even if they're, you do have a few picks left, you do have some young players left. You know, I don't think the Jazz are going to get literally everything. And so, like, I could see how you could talk yourself into it. And, you know, I do think that maybe Donovan Mitchell is a little bit underrated at this point, kind of from the average Twitter fan point of view, because the Jazz, you know, because he played poorly in the first round, because the Jazz failed, he is, like, legitimately pretty incredible offensively, like a three-level scorer, a guy who runs a pick and roll at over a point per possession, like, just does a lot of really good stuff offensively, and again, is young and can probably develop. So, like, I get why, you know, this isn't a swing for a over 30 Carmelo Anthony. This isn't a this isn't a Steph Marbury situation, I don't think. This is a good young player that you're going to have for a long time, and so I get why you'd want to give up a lot of assets for him, especially, you know, kind of mid-level assets, like, you know, kind of late, mid to late first-round picks, and guys who were drafted in that spot.
We'll see if those have been late first round picks. I'm sure, in addition to the number of assets, the number of picks conveying, there's going to be a lot of haggling over the protections on them. And I got to imagine that's very important to the Jazz to have the upside in those picks, right? I would think that'd be even more important than the quantity, right? If they're all, I don't know, top five protected, well, I might rather give up a pick or two and have the possibility, especially knowing the Knicks' history.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
There was a report way earlier in the offseason from Sean O'Connell that Rudy Gobert was going to tell the Jazz, it's me or Donovan Mitchell. Obviously, Rudy got his trade. We don't know whether Rudy Gobert conveyed anything like that to the Jazz. Obviously, nothing has been reported like that. I'm not asking whether he gave that ultimatum, but there was something in the report that struck me. According to Sean O'Connell, Rudy Gobert's kind of thinking was he's consistently excellent. Every year he's bringing it, playing at a high level. And Donovan Mitchell, this is again citing Sean O'Connell's interpretation of what Rudy Gobert is feeling. Donovan Mitchell is falling off a little bit, not looking as athletic and as explosive as he used to. I think that's very obvious on defense. You say Donovan Mitchell never defended at a high level. I agree with that, but I think it's gotten way worse in recent years. Like the defensive effort has just been pathetic in recent years. And then I kind of thought, I'm like, man, I guess he's not really attacking the basket quite as much as he used to. Like, this is a guy who was in a dunk contest. He has great athleticism for an NBA player, or at least has had. I don't know. It's part of what I'm asking. But he's so skilled, right? He's improved it. You haven't noticed it as much because he's improved his skill. He's a better shooter. He's a better ball handler. Like, I don't think it's led to a drop-off, but it makes me go, huh. You know, one of the reasons I think Donovan Mitchell is so valuable is because of his age. He's in his mid-20s. He should remain a really good athlete for a long time. But then I'm starting to wonder, is there something going on there? Is he, you know, how he's aging? Is it effort? I don't know. What do you think? Should the Knicks or whatever team is interested in training for Donovan Mitchell have concerns on those fronts?
So I think I agree, like, probably lost a inch or two of bounce.
That's troubling at that age, isn't it?
I think a little bit, but I do think, like, the other stuff has kind of made up for it. Like, so I'll say on the defensive end, the problem, I think 2 years ago, like, kind of in the Clippers series, that playoffs was, like, he was playing on a sprained ankle and just couldn't move well, right? Like, that was kind of a injury. Okay. And I think, frankly, last year it was an effort limitation where I don't think that he was necessarily giving it all in kind of support of the team. You know, I think that there were kind of real effort and energy questions there. I do think that, yeah, I don't think he would win a dunk contest today. And I do think that his 3-point shot especially has improved to outweigh that. And then I think he's gotten a lot smarter about how he attacks the rim, where it's a lot slower. It's not Luka Doncic, right? But it's that kind of maybe James Harden-ish approach of getting the defender off balance rather than trying to jump over the defender all the time. And I think that that's resulted in much, much higher mid-range efficiency if you look at his stats. And then, yeah, kind of a, you know, attacking the basket when it makes sense to do so. And, I think his, I bet that his rim percentage of field goals is down as well. Just because, you know, he is kind of pulling up more often to get that open shot using the brakes rather than using the gas, I guess. So I guess I'm not that worried about it. You know, I guess he's not Russell Westbrook in his prime, you know, but I think that it's probably an overall better approach for him as a player, and one that's more effective and more efficient for the offense. I mean, look, the Jazz were the number one offensive team in the league last year, and it was Donovan Mitchell driving a significant part of that, right? Like, had great teammates around him, no doubt, Conley, Bogdanovich, Gobert, etc. But like, Donovan was the high usage guy in that offense that everyone game planned for. And I think he did take a step there, especially, you know, kind of middle late of part of the season in terms of his efficiency and his smarts of how to play the game. And I do think that should last for, you know, several years to be sure.
You know, you mentioned Carmelo Anthony. I want to get excited about this from a Knicks standpoint. Like, I thought, like, a player as breathtaking as Donovan Mitchell, his skill that you just talked about, his age, the position, all that. Like, this is awesome for the Knicks. And I thought, it's like, he's the biggest star they've gotten since Carmelo Anthony, which wasn't that long ago. And I think the reason it's so forgettable about Carmelo Anthony is because there wasn't the team success. And I look at, well, why wasn't there the team success? And I think the big problem, one, Carmelo Anthony was probably a little overrated. But two, Carmelo Anthony was a great player, Hall of Fame player, excellent player. The problem was he wasn't quite as good as what he cost. The Knicks had to give up a ton to get him, a ton in the trade to Denver, and then they had to give Carmelo Anthony a max contract. And Carmelo Anthony brought a lot as an individual scorer. He was not a great passer. He's a plus rebounder for his position, but not a good defender. And so you have the passing as a weakness for somebody you're investing so much in. You have the defense as a weakness for somebody you're investing so much in. I never got the sense that Carmelo Anthony did a great job of setting a competitive tone within the team, right? There's a natural leadership that falls into the player who's in that role. And, you know, not that he didn't get along with his teammates or anything like that, but just I never got the sense that he was holding guys accountable and bringing out the very best, summoning his teammates to play even better, demanding that they play even better one way or another, getting the most out of it. It just never seemed like he was. And I think that led to, you know, Linux pretty much underwhelming during his tenure, but heck of an individual player. He finished third in MVP voting one year. I don't think Donovan Mitchell is ever going to finish third in MVP voting. I don't think it's impossible, but I would bet against that. Donovan Mitchell, I think, especially when he first came to Utah, was so lauded for his approach to the game, the energy he brought to us, a magnetic presence, but we're talking about somebody who hasn't been trying on defense. Things like that. Wants out of Utah. Not that that's a sin or anything. Should there be questions about whether he, as an individual player, is capable, given everything the Knicks are going to have to give up, to lead to that level of team success that the Knicks did not achieve with Carmelo Anthony?
Yes. Look, I think that's totally a fair point. Like, I guess the question you asked can be boiled down to, is Donovan Mitchell the number one player on a championship level team? And, you know, at this point, I think the answer is not from what we've seen so far. You know, is a 26 point per game scorer, but has not impacted the game in some of the other ways that you would expect a true number one championship level guy to do. You know, like, he's not Kawhi, he's not LeBron, right? Like, he's not changing everything out there like a Steph Curry, right? So if you're optimistic, the comp is Dwayne Wade, but Dwayne Wade was also probably the greatest guard shot blocker of a generation, right? And Donovan's not that, and just had kind of preternatural ability to see the floor defensively in a way that Donovan hasn't shown. I think that's totally a fair concern. And if you're a Knicks fan, like, I understand a reluctance to give up the six first round picks and the pick swaps and the and the young players. Like, I do understand that. I think ultimately you're basically, if you're a Knicks fan, you know, the upside play is maybe Donovan does become Dwayne Wade. Maybe RJ Barrett becomes a substantial number two or number one. And then, you know, you can kind of combine pieces or work the roster around those guys so that you are championship competitive, or at least kind of putting yourself in the in a good situation, a la Milwaukee, a la Toronto, a la Boston this season. So, I think those are totally fair concerns about who Donovan Mitchell is as a player. And, you know, like, it's fair to say, hey, he's 26. This is probably what he is at this point. But yeah, I also do see kind of reasons for upside in a new situation with, you know, again, a coach in Johnny Bryant he's familiar with, and just kind of a different supporting cast where, you know, he can kind of come back and be that guy again. I guess in terms of veteran leadership, which you kind of asked about too, like, I do think that he can be a better leader than he's shown in the last couple of years. You know, I think he is like a positive guy who wants to do right and is can actually honestly be inspiring. But yeah, just like the overall stagnancy of the Jazz situation and kind of his displeasure with the whole situation made that really difficult this year.
You know, just to clarify, and I think you answered exactly what I'm curious about, but I thought Carmelo Anthony could be the best player on a championship team. I thought, was it 2009? One of his last years with the Nuggets. I thought, yeah, 2009. I think that was a championship caliber team. They didn't win it, obviously, but championship caliber with the right breaks. He was the best player on that team. My just thought was there wasn't enough margin for error. It was so hard to build a championship level team around him because of everything that was required to get him, to keep him, to pay him. Not impossible, but just very, very difficult.
And, you know, I think you need kind of a unique second guy too. You know, the difference between Chauncey Billups and Amari Stoudemire are, you know, it's night and day. And in terms of who they are on and off the court, I think that's fair to say, like, hey, do the Knicks have that guy on the roster right now that's a Chauncey Billups-like presence? Probably not.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I didn't want you on just to talk about a hypothetical Knicks team with Donovan Mitchell. I'm also curious about the Jazz a little bit. And I think as they go this direction, trading Rudy Gobert for picks, heading toward, it sounds like, trading Donovan Mitchell for picks. I think the big question is, what is the tolerance for tanking in Utah for one season, for multiple seasons? Now, this is directly an ownership question. It's an indirectly a question about fan support, because that's going to influence the owner. It's going to influence revenue. But what do you think the tolerance is for tanking in Utah?
You know, I think among the fan base, it's actually pretty reasonable. Like, I think Jazz fans are pretty well-informed and relatively patient. Like, you know, I think obviously the obvious comp is the process Sixers and, like, you know, I think Jazz fans are probably more understanding than that. I think the Jazz are tanking here. You know, I don't know what Ryan Smith's appetite for it will be, the new Jazz owner. You know, obviously he's only been in charge for a season and a half. So that will be interesting. But he's, you know, made pretty clear through the move that's happened so far and the moves that could happen now that he's willing to give Danny Ainge that chance. And so, yeah, you know, it's obviously easier said than done, and we'll see how he feels about it in a year or two or three. I think ultimately it's going to be better than most tanking situations. You know, like, I'm thinking the 2013-14 Jazz, which they traded their cap space, let Al Jefferson and Paul Millsap go, their starting front court, and traded that cap space to the Warriors for two first round picks. That team was actually pretty well supported. And, like, you know, the building wasn't full, but there were 15, 16, 17,000 fans in there. And I think that's probably what I expect with this Jazz rebuild. And then honestly, the nice thing is that because the Jazz are in a small market, the revenue sharing rules are really, really friendly to them. And it's not going to get ugly from a income point of view, from ownership's point of view, you know, because they are going to be getting relatively large revenue sharing payments from the league. So I think ultimately, like, they're pretty well set up to undergo a rebuild. you know, and then you look at, they have three picks in the first round right now in 2023. They obviously could and probably will get more in this Donovan Mitchell deal. You know, I think it could be one where, yeah, next year is going to suck and, you know, the Jazz are going to be really bad with, you know, not any of their kind of own homegrown young players on the roster. But the year after that, we'll have kind of things that they can sell.
Yeah, that's a great point on market size and revenue sharing. That's obviously different from a bigger market like Philadelphia. I say ownership because the 76ers are a great example. I think Josh Harris went into that like gung-ho about tanking, liking Sam Hinkie's plan, fully on board, and then he lived it. And it wasn't fun, and you're hearing from the league and other owners and a lot of criticism from casual fans, right? I think that's often overlooked. I'm sure there are a lot of Jazz fans who are excited about tanking. They're the hardcore fans who are going to be interested regardless and are going to be there and are definitely going to be there when the Jazz come out the other end of it in really good shape. But there are a ton of casual fans who are just going to tune out for a few years and not spend money on the team. And that can be tough depending on the fan base, depending on the market, and most importantly, depending on the owner's will to follow through with that plan.
Totally. And yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see, yeah, how ownership reacts to that. But, and you're right, like, totally easier said than done. The Josh Harris example is a good one. But like, I think the league, you know, I think the league isn't going to be as punitive as they were with the Sixers. You know, I think probably the closest comparison recently is and that's, sorry, you know, I think that's just a different, you know, that's been fine, right? Like, that's been a small market situation where they've been allowed to grow.
Well, it's still ongoing, right? We don't know how many years the Thunder are going to take. We don't know how many years the Jazz are going to do it. You know, that's what was so unprecedented in Philadelphia, was setting out to tank for as long as they did. Sometimes teams end up bad for quite a number of years, but rarely do they go into it so eagerly. Maybe never have they gone into it so eagerly.
Agreed.
So you obviously have a great understanding of Rudy Gobert, of Royce O'Neal. So I feel like with the things that have gone on with both of those players being traded, some of the analysis afterward, I think people are missing a couple things. You tell me if I'm off base on this. Let's start with Gobert.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a realtor can help answer. Because realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Right, super interesting pairing with Gobert and Karl Anthony Towns. It's been discussed from a lot of angles. I don't know whether it's going to work or whether it's not. But one thing that I keep hearing is, well, the Timberwolves traded for Rudy Gobert to fix their defense, and Gobert's not even that good of a defender in the playoffs, right? He can't guard on the perimeter. He gets played off the floor. You know, and even the people who are more generous to Gobert say, well, he doesn't get played off the floor. He's still out there. But yeah, like, his playoff defense is a weakness. And I think that's a little bit off. I think that's a lot off, actually. I think Gobert is a better regular season defender than a playoff defender. But I still think he's darn good in the playoffs. And this is what I keep coming back to is – and when teams went small, one, if you have Karl-Anthony Towns out there, you can punish teams for going small on the other end. But let's just stick to the defensive end for the Timberwolves. I think when teams go small, try and spread the floor against Minnesota, you know, and let's say you can pull Rudy Gobert out to the perimeter. One, he's an underrated perimeter defender. Two, now the secondary rim protector is Karl-Anthony Towns. I think Karl-Anthony Towns is a big weak spot as a defensive anchor when he's your center. It's a big weak spot. I get why the Timberwolves went to get Gobert. But I think Towns in that role is going to be 1,000 times better than Bojan Bogdanovic. To me, that's the difference, is that even if you get Gobert pulled out to the perimeter, Towns can step into the paint and protect the rim in a way that nobody on the Jazz could even come close to doing. And so I'm not saying the pairing's necessarily going to work, but to me, I see that as viable. What do you think?
Yeah, like I'm with you, and I think you know, the Minnesota's leadership has been pretty clear in interviews that they think that the Jazz did not use Rudy Gobert to the best extent in the best way, which I think is really interesting. So do they play less drop big defense, frankly? Are they going to be more switch heavy and use Gobert's length in other ways? I think it's going to be interesting. I think you're totally right that, like, having a secondary rim protector behind Rudy can and will help in some significant ways. You can switch more. Maybe they probably can't be as aggressive as they were in pick and roll last year, but like they can be pretty aggressive. I would have frankly loved to see Rudy Gobert with Patrick Beverley and build on his team, but you know, that's not going to happen. But yeah, I mean, look, to me, this is a legacy changing year for so many of the pieces that defined the Jazz for so long, right? Like, definitely a legacy defining year for Donovan. This will, you know, how well the Jazz play or how well Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell do will define Quinn Snyder's value a little bit. And then, you know, Rudy has, you know, makes his Hall of Fame case ironclad if he plays well with Minnesota. There's a ton of opportunity here, and I'm going to be really, really curious to see how it plays out. I could frankly see it going one or two ways, and I just don't know necessarily what to expect, but I'm really fascinated to see it.
See, I'm not a believer that Rudy Gobert was underutilized and has all this untapped potential. I think given his age, he's probably going to go the other way, but I just think he's so good right now at this moment, and the Timberwolves are positioned enough to continue to put him in positions where he has a high impact and cover for his deficiencies, and more so he'll cover for their deficiencies. Do you see something like, do you think he was underutilized in Utah? I do not.
I don't. I don't think he really has untapped potential as a player. He's not going to like start shooting threes for the Wolves next year, but like they think schematically the Jazz could have and should have done something different. I don't think so. You know, I think Quinn Snyder is really smart, and I think Quinn probably put him in the best positions to succeed. They think they can do more of the like the French national team stuff with him and get him more points down low, I think, which is going to be interesting. But we'll see. It's going to be I personally think probably not, given how NBA referees are currently officiating contact. But maybe.
Yeah, I suppose you could get him run more pick and rolls, get him the ball a little more inside. Not a post-up sort of thing. I just think maybe you could do – that's it. Like, maybe you could do the things the Jazz were already doing just a little more often with him. But that's it. Like, I don't think there's some secret unlock. So, but we'll see. Royce O'Neal. Ryan Windhorst – I love Wendy. Got a lot of attention for that clip where he talked about the Royce O'Neal trade. It looks super prophetic now, where you know he hinted that there's more coming in Utah, and Gobert got traded, and now it looks like Donovan Mitchell is going to get traded. And it was just so much fun watching his dramatic reveal of that. The problem with that, though, tell me if I'm wrong here, I think that Royce O'Neal trade was a home run for the Jazz, even if the Jazz said, we're keeping Mitchell, we're keeping Gobert, we're trying to win again next year. I think Royce O'Neal has slipped a lot. I don't think he's nearly as good defensively as he was. And I think to get a first-round pick for him is a no-brainer, no matter the direction your team is going.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like I was brigading the anti-Royce O'Neal train for, like, the last couple of seasons. And I feel bad. Like, he's a nice enough guy. But, like, Yeah, I watch him and I'm like, how do you, you know, like, he got 3 all defensive team votes in 2021. I was like, how? I did not see him as a anywhere near an all defensive caliber player. You know, like, I think he, frankly, just is not good enough at screen navigation, is not good enough at keeping guys in front. He's 6'4", but I think he's actually better as a wing defender, as a small forward or power forward defender, rather than a guard defender. And I think he was probably overutilized by the Jazz to guard guys like Damian Lillard and Steph Curry, and just got cooked.
And Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, exactly, right? For those guys is not a plus defender, right? I can think of 100 guys in the league I'd probably rather have defensively. And then offensively, you know, I think it was Hollinger who wrote this, that he thinks most of it – no, I think it was Pelton, actually, who wrote most of his value is on the offensive end. And I agree with that as, like, a guy who keeps the ball moving, makes the right play 90% of the time, and can make open threes. He just is the lowest usage player in the NBA this side of Matisse Thybul. And, I think ultimately it depends on your team construct, and obviously the Jazz could deal with that with – Conley, Mitchell, Bogdanovich, Jordan Clarkson, Rudy Gobert. But if you don't have that level of talent around you, it becomes really hard to be a 9% usage player. And I don't know that he'll ever take on a bigger role than that. But, you know, I think earlier on in his career when he was trying to make the league, he was a better defender, was frankly, I think, more motivated on that end. But, like, yeah, I was – not at all, and, you know, I think this was clear from my tweets and my writing, like, not at all a Royce O'Neal fan in a vacuum over the last couple of years, and totally agree that a first-round pick for that caliber of player was, I think, a win, no matter what direction the Jazz went.
You know, I agree he's better on forwards, but when you're talking about a good team like the Jazz, the whole point of defending forwards well is – defending the guys like LeBron and Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and some other good forwards who don't just play in Los Angeles. And at that point, O'Neal's size was a detriment. He just because he could do that better and held up, you know, he could hold up. He could be good in some lesser matchups, but you need somebody for those matchups, right? That's the whole point. And I just think that's where his size came in, and he didn't have it on the perimeter. I think he used to be a better defender, but it's just not there anymore. And at his age, what is he now? He's 29. Yeah. That probably doesn't get better. To me, that trade didn't signify anything. I think it's just more likely that Brian Windhorst already knew what was going to happen.
Agreed. And, you know, I know that Windy was – I mean, it was a strange trade, and it just, you know, doesn't make sense necessarily from a Jazz point of view.
If you don't watch Royce O'Neal.
Because Royce O'Neal and Donovan Mitchell are friends.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I agree. Directionally, like, you could have swapped that pick for a, let's say, a Josh Richardson type. That doesn't fit into the Jazz's TPE, but whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like, someone who I think could have helped kind of equally, and you would have been just fine. You know, I think ultimately it was revealing of direction because of relationships on the team, and then – you know, frankly, I'm also, like, wondering what the heck are the Nets doing, and maybe that's why the Jazz were on that offer when they did, is, like, you know, Kevin Durant asked for a trade, and within 15 minutes we hear that they've traded Royce O'Neal for the first-round pick.
Yeah, I wonder if that was one where it was already lined up, and maybe there were some questions about exactly what it would look like in the end, and with Durant's trade request, the Jazz just demanded, like, no, you already agreed to this aspect of it, no take-backs.
Yeah.
So just get it over with.
I mean, kind of fascinating if that's what happened. I mean, I had heard rumors about Royce and a first round pick. I didn't know the Nets side of it, but I kind of had heard those in the week or two leading up to it. So that came to fruition in the way that it did was interesting. Maybe just a coincidence, but it kind of didn't feel like it, right?
Kind of. No, I mean, it didn't feel like it, but also, I don't know what the Nets are doing. They're just kind of proceeding as if everything is normal, right? They re-signed Patty Mills, they signed TJ Warren, they re-signed, I mean, Nick Claxton's younger, so that's a little different, but Mills and Warren, and, you know, maybe they're not going to trade Kevin Durant, maybe they're not going to trade Kyrie Irving. I'm definitely not as confident about either of them getting traded as I am Donovan Mitchell. So I'm not saying necessarily there was something to it, but it did seem like it was strange timing, for sure.
I mean, maybe they just see him as like a Bruce Bowen replacement.
Bruce Brown.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Duh. Yeah. I guess. I mean, good luck with that. I just don't. I mean,
I thought that was kind of his best role last season, was as at the four, setting screens and like on the short roll, making reads.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's niche.
I don't think he'll pass as well as Brown, but he will shoot threes better. He won't defend as well, right? That's a lot of what Bruce Brown does, is defending on the perimeter. It's just, you know, because he's a defensive first player, it's finding a creative offensive role to make him work. Royce O'Neal, you don't need as creative as a role because he can hit threes.
Yeah, agreed. I do think he's a really good passer, actually. But I agreed. Like, the defensive gap, I think, is really, really, really big.
Before I get you out of here, do you want to, you know, we mentioned Windhorst and the reporting. Do you want to wade into some dangerous territory real quick?
Let's do it.
So you tweeted this, the possibilities of this report from Woj about a Donovan Mitchell trade coming. And you said, well, the fact that the report itself came out is interesting, let alone what it says. And I thought that was super interesting. You gave a few possibilities of what that could mean. And then you came back and said, you know, you're kind of hearing that the reason this report happened is because a trade is getting close. And Woj needs to lay the seeds for that after there's been so much reporting that the Jazz aren't going to trade Donovan Mitchell, that Donovan Mitchell's not going to request a trade, right? I don't know. I'm not saying this is the case, but I wonder with Gobert too, but and Mitchell, if at some point we're going to hear that they requested a trade, that they wanted to be traded. I have the same curiosity about DeJounte Murray. At some point, are we going to hear that in some, I mean, trade requests can vary in intensity, right? You can have on one end the Ben Simmons where they don't show up at all. On the softer end, you could have any number of bench players running, like Kevin Martin, Kenny Martin Jr. With the Rockets, where it sounds like he kind of went to them and was like, hey, I'm not really playing. Like, I'd appreciate if you could trade me, but like, you know, he's not going to not fulfill his contract if they don't. He's going to still show up and play for the Rockets, right? There's all this gray area of how it could be. Probably somewhere closer to the Ben Simmons side, but not completely to that level, right? We've seen this play out already with James Harden, where Woj was reporting James Harden, there's not going to be a trade. He's not getting traded. It's not going to happen. And then shortly before it obviously was going to happen, Woj just said, oh, now the teams start talking. As if they started talking just before the trade deadline and everything came together all at once. Yeah, right. So it sounds like something similar is happening here, where a Donovan Mitchell trade has been in the works, has been headed this way for a long time, and we're just kind of being fed that there's been a change somehow, where nothing's really changed other than the reporting. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't fundamentally buy the concept that on July 2nd, the Jazz were like, yep, we're going to rebuild around the 40-win Utah Jazz with Donovan Mitchell as the star and no centers and no wings and eight guards, and that's going to be the team. And, you know, like, we're doing it. And given everything that I know that happened with Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz this season, like, I just fundamentally don't buy that. And I think clear my reporting in the days after that, you know, I heard pushback on that idea that the Jazz were keeping Mitchell. And, you know, so then, yeah, that these talks happened and Woj kind of had to backpedal is kind of how I'm reading it. And like you said, you know, I would have more confidence in Woj's reporting, who is, you know, very possibly the GOAT NBA reporter. But he's blown these situations the last couple of years. Like you said, the James Harden deal. And, you know, the Woj reporting has been more accurate once a deal, you know, is real pretty, really pretty ironclad once the deal happens, and is not so ironclad in the days, hours, days and weeks ahead of a deal or of a signing. So, I think that's kind of one of those things where, yeah, I think you kind of, then it's kind of, okay, how do you interpret the meta information there, if you will, of like, okay, so yeah, why is this report coming out now? Who leaked this report and why? I think kind of for me, one key example was the Quinn Snyder reporting, right? Where Mark Stein had reported since March that Quinn Snyder was kind of considered a coaching target for other teams. And I spoke to Quinn later on in March about those reports and kind of got the feeling from talking to him that he wasn't necessarily going to be returning as Jazz coach. that, you know, we knew for months that he had not signed a contract extension. And then, you know, for Woj and Tim McMahon, who, you know, I love, is, you know, for them to report, hey, Quinn Snyder hasn't signed a contract extension yet, 2 days before he chose to resign, that, even though that report had zero new information, even from months prior, meant something somewhere, right? Like, meant that one of the two sides, maybe both, had a message to put out in the media. And I think that's where, you know, I think kind of intelligent fans who kind of can read the tea leaves, who understand how reporters work and kind of what sources they're connected to, can kind of get an advantage of understanding kind of what's going on behind the scenes and what a report really means, not just necessarily even the verbatim text of that report, if that makes sense.
It does. Quinn Snyder, I've wondered, like, did he know the Jazz wanted to go this direction, right? I mean, there's a lot of reason. I doubt he stepped away for one single reason, but I've wondered, like, A, maybe he wasn't as interested in rebuilding and knew that was the way this was headed. But you also say, like, you know, you raise a good point. You know, there was this question about whether he returned for a long time before he actually stepped away.
Yeah, and
has this been well? I don't mean to cut you off, but I guess very specifically, my question is: have the Jazz been headed this way for that long of a time, or is Quinn Snyder's departure just so unrelated from the Jazz rebuilding?
No, I don't think it's unrelated, and you know that's not to say that it's everything, but you know, I know that, you know, the Donovan asking out, or Donovan trying to leave Utah, or Donovan not being happy with the situation, or whatever you want to call it, has been simmering not for just weeks, but for months and even years. And I would also say that, you know, the Jazz have had, like, significant trade conversations with Donovan and Rudy, you know, in past years, along with kind of the other compelling role pieces on this team. So I think there was a little bit of reading the tea leaves and seeing what was coming. And then, frankly, that even if the status quo had been maintained, like, that was kind of best case scenario for the Jazz from a 2022-23 wins scenario, is probably run it back. You know, like, they didn't have any cap space. They don't have any draft picks. There wasn't any way they were going to get better. Last year sucked. Like, last year was no fun for Quinn to coach. Was not what he likes about coaching, you know, and none of it was about X's and O's and outsmarting the other coach and improving his players and getting into the player development kind of space and, you know, working on cohesion. It was egocentric. It was individualistic. It was not fun. And it, you know, was very different than his previous 7-8 years with the team. And so, like, I think he was worked out. I think he didn't like the situation he was in. And then moving forward, it looked ugly. And then I guess I'll also say, like, then, you know, I think Quinn maybe could have stuck that out if he had kind of a loyalty to people in the organization that had earned that loyalty over the course of the first 7 years. But new ownership group, right? Like, it's not the Miller family anymore. It's Ryan Smith, and it's a new general manager, and it's a new front office, and it's you know, the coaching staff had significant rollover, and just like everything was going to change so much more. Everything had already changed. Everything was awful. And then from a wins losses point of view, it wasn't going to be good for the next few years. And like, it just didn't make sense for Quinn anymore on kind of any level for him to stay.
What is the genesis of Donovan Mitchell's dissatisfaction in Utah? Is it just that it's not New York? Is it Rudy Gobert, and even beyond just the whole coronavirus episode? You know, I hope I'm not getting this quote wrong. Did Rudy Gobert say something like, I get it, like, I know I can be an asshole? Okay, I'd feel real bad if I put that in his mouth and he didn't say that. You know, Rudy Gobert's not the easiest guy, but look, it still seems like Donovan Mitchell wants out even after Gobert's gone, so there's something more to it than that. Like, where did this go wrong?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm trying to decide, you know, I think ultimately it's multifaceted, you know, like I actually think, like, I don't know that Rudy and Donovan were unsalvageable, but like it was a significant problem. And I don't know that, you know, Donovan living in Utah for the rest of his life wouldn't have been unacceptable for him, but I do think that, it would have been difficult for him given his social justice views and wanting to make a difference in the community and, frankly, not wanting to be hated on by the legislature all the time. I think there were, you know, I think there's a market size component here, too, where Donovan has and Adidas and CAA have goals that are more easy to achieve if he's the number one guy in a market like New York. And I guess, again, this isn't like a sexy answer, but I do just think that it's kind of a it's a composite of all those three things. I mean, I've talked to some friends who are like, you know, I loved Utah and I'm a native Utahan but it's when I was in my early 20s, that wasn't necessarily where I wanted to live. You know, I wanted to see the world and I wanted to go elsewhere for college. And I think that it's kind of natural for Donovan to want to spread those wings again, then especially given kind of where the team was. And again, that how little fun everyone had last year, where it did feel like that they were running into a dead end. So, I think it was something that crescendoed rather than kind of came all at once. And obviously there were kind of ups and downs. The COVID incident was definitely a down point. Frankly, like the Rudy Gobert comparing him to Devin Booker last year was a down point. Like there just are, you know, definite down points. And then there were kind of high points too, but like it's just a number of different factors.
You mentioned CAA there. This is, I think, the last thing I want to ask about. And I hope to keep this forward-looking. All these reports that the Jazz weren't going to trade Donovan Mitchell, that he wasn't forcing a trade out. Once again, I'm not sure that latter part is what's happening now. But everything, all the reporting came out to downplay the possibility of a trade. And now, as you said, everybody's got to plant the seeds that, oh, no, they've had a change of heart. A trade's back on. Who wanted it out there and why that a trade wasn't happening? Was that just the Jazz trying to get leverage? I don't know how well that worked. I think maybe some people bought that. I know there are plenty of people who didn't, who always thought, oh, Mitchell's just going to get traded anyway. We don't buy this. Like, what was the point of the subterfuge? And I ask that to see if there's anything we can learn going forward about the situation.
I think it was like a fairly transparent leverage play of like, yeah, that if you are having a fire sale, you're going to get lower prices. And so if you can convince other teams that you're not, then that helps. I don't know. Again, yeah, totally agree that they did not convince other teams. I do think it was probably beneficial for Donovan, to also not appear to ask for a trade, you know, like, Donovan's brand is as the nice guy, right? Sure. Like and I think that is pretty reflective of who he is as a person, but like does legitimately support kids and does spend a lot of his time with the general public in the way that like a lot of NBA stars don't. I think if he asks for a trade, that's a bad look in the public eye. And so if you can kind of, you know, if you can do this as cleanly as possible, where the Jazz aren't trying to trade a guy, but they're just, you know, willing to be bowled over by an offer, and Donovan's not asking for a trade, but is really just like, you know, keeping his eyes open to other situations, then I think that kind of that narrative kind of does work out best for everyone. And I, you know, whether that was a implicit agreement from the Jazz and Donovan's camp, or whether that was like explicitly said that, you know, that they worked together on that messaging, you know, that was a good thing. But, you know, that being said, there was also the report when Quinn Snyder quit that Donovan was nerves, right? Like, so that was, I think, pretty clearly a CAA, like a Donovan camp making his statement, making his stance clear on some stuff. And so, you know, I guess there have been shots fired in this, proxy battle, if you will, but like it's, you know, I ultimately, Honestly, I would have expected a Mitchell departure to be messier than this. And, you know, it could still get messier, but I think it's been relatively reasonably done so far.
Yeah, that report about surprised and unnerved, surprised is what gave it away that this is kind of phony. To me, it sounded like Mitchell was just trying to lay the groundwork up. If I need to request a trade, if I want to request a trade, this will be my reason. You know, not that he had to do it, but like it gave him something. If you want to go down that road, but you're right. It's been very clean. He does leave his reputation intact. To compare it to James Harden's situation once again, it sounded like Harden wanted to go that route. He didn't want to request a trade. He was just sulking and trying to convince the Nets to trade him without actually saying it to protect his reputation, and it didn't work at all. I think his reputation came out way worse. It's funny who's better, who's worse at managing those. So much of it has to do with how it gets reported. That's one thing I especially love about your coverage. It's good. It's great coverage, just in the general traditional sense. But I think you are more than any beat writer in the country going into these layers of, well, why are other people reporting things the way they're reporting them? What does it mean? Let me help you unpack it. So always read Andy at the Salt Lake Tribune. Follow him on Twitter at Andy B. Larson. Andy, thanks a ton for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?